Welcome to a Monday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, we'll talk about why we should be taking these trade rumors of the Heat trading Goran Dragic to the Suns seriously.
And we're opening up the mailbag to talk about how the Heat can best build around the trio of Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson, and Bam Adebayo. Thank you so much for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the Heat in the NBA for FanSided. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Romello, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat and league at large for SB Nation and FanSided. You can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRomello13.
We asked our listeners to start submitting questions for our weekly mailbag via an iTunes review, and we were off to a slow start, especially last week, David. We got one question about not even the Heat, but Guardians of the Galaxy. It was a lot of fun, but luckily some of you heard our request, and we've got a few more questions to answer this week, and things have definitely started picking up. We know it's the slowest part of the offseason, but we're here for you to talk anything Heat-related, so please keep going on iTunes and keep leaving five-star reviews and send us whatever questions you might have in there. But before we get to those new questions, David, some news, as we've heard multiple reports that the Phoenix Suns, who of course just pulled off a trade to get Ryan Anderson and D'Anthony Melton from the Rockets, are looking now to acquire a point guard, and the name Goran Dragic has been linked in a possible deal. David, do you think a potential return of Dragic to the Valley of the Suns is in the works?
Now, you and I were talking about this before we started recording, and we're kind of doubtful of the fact that Dragic is the kind of asset that Phoenix would be looking for. Now, it makes sense in a number of ways, to be honest with you. So, obviously, it would be a return to Phoenix where he played for a large portion of his career. It had some limited success there. But he did burn his bridge on the way out. He said some things about that organization, which we've heard and understood that he's taken the steps to mend with the front office. So maybe there's a reparation there. They also hired Igor
Kokoskov.
That's it. And who obviously has some connection to Dragic being a part of the Serbian team. Serbian. Wait, what am I talking about here? I'm all over the place today. I'm sorry. I'm completely thrown off.
Slovenian
team. Yeah, a Slovenian team that Dragic helped guide to the EuroLeague title. So there's a connection there. It made sense. We talked about this a couple of months ago when the Kokoskov hire took place, that it made a lot of sense to try and acquire Dragic. We'd heard that there was some interest. But now we've heard the exact opposite, that they're actually not interested in acquiring somebody like Dragic because of that burned bridge, because he's a little bit older, doesn't quite fit the timeline of what they're doing. Now, I'd heard that Phoenix front office was making a serious push for the playoffs, which seems kind of weird considering LeBron James shifted the power towards the Western Conference even more by joining the Lakers, and you've already got a number of teams vying for a playoff spot, teams that have improved all over the Western Conference. Phoenix made some moves. They signed Trevor Ariza in free agency, as you pointed out. They acquired Anderson. So, they've got the number one pick, DeAndre. And it's a good roster. It's a start of something. But to make a playoff push seems kind of, a little far-fetched to me. But they're looking for a starting point guard. They have a need there. Dragic, that name that comes up there as one that's a fit because, obviously, the coach, the system, the city that he played it for. But I just don't know that he's the right fit for that team. For Miami, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, I'm buying the rumors. And I agree with everything that you're saying, but I buy the rumors mostly because Robert Sarver, the owner of the Suns, has been a famously impatient owner. He's been trying to push for the playoffs for years now, and I think that there's a lot of, with having Kokoskov there, with having sort of Devin Booker on the precipice of NBA stardom, with having drafted Ayton there, there is, I think, for some reason, an urgency with that team to sort of, double down on this excitement.
Yeah. They've missed the playoffs for so many years, right. And they're kind of saying, look, we've got a good team now. We're going to make a push for the playoffs.
And so I think that there is some urgency within that organization, which is not how you and I would do it. And you and I would also look at Goran Dragic and say, he's not within the window of this core group, so it doesn't make sense to acquire a guy like that. But that said, I don't think that that's how the Suns are thinking. I think Kokoskov would benefit from having a guy like Dragic and maybe even pushing that management staff there in Phoenix to give a second look at Goran Dragic. And as far as the burnt bridge goes, I don't think that matters. I am not convinced that that's even an issue because we've seen LeBron go back to Cleveland. We saw Dwayne Wade come back to Miami. Burnt bridges are they're burnt bridges at the moment, but bridges are rebuilt pretty quickly in the NBA. I'm not concerned whatsoever with that. As far as, look, there's a new coach, it's a new regime for the most part there. There's a different feeling around that team. And so, yeah, Dragic doesn't fit there, but maybe they're wanting to grab him. And then maybe they're not necessarily looking at him as somebody who is within who they need. Maybe they don't need a starting point guard who is in the same developmental window of that core. Look, Dragic has 2 more years left on his contract.
Yeah.
For those 2 years, he will be an above-average point guard in the NBA. And maybe there's something to having Dragic there as at least a placeholder for a couple of years at point guard, which allows Devin Booker to play a little bit more off the ball because he had to play so much on the ball last season. Maybe they view his development better off the ball. And so that's got to be a consideration of theirs. I think we should be taking these rumors very seriously. But the big question is, does Phoenix have anything that Miami wants? What would a package even look like? And I think that there's a couple of things that stand out as far as salary, and that's a couple players, rather. That's Tyson Chandler and TJ Warren. Tyson Chandler is on an expiring deal, making about $13.5 million this year. And then TJ Warren is making a little bit less than $12 million a year, and he's got 4 more years left on his contract. So that would be where you would have to start if you're the Heat. That's where you would start building a deal, was around one of those two guys.
I mean, I have to say that on the surface, those deals kind of sound terrible. Like, none of those players fit what Miami's doing, obviously. And I know from Miami's perspective, why even engage in these kind of talks if there's some truth to these rumors? It's to free up the logjam in the backcourt, obviously. You're not going to move Tyler Johnson's contract. Deion Waiters is coming back. You're looking to re-sign Dwayne Wade because of the goodwill that brings, the NBA karma that you're trying to rebuild by re-signing him. You know, you've got Wayne Ellington for 1 year. Dragic is the only true point guard on the team, but you have other options, other playmakers, not to mention Deion Waiters, Justice Winslow, who could slide to the point guard position. But I just don't like the deal for Miami. Like, I still think that Goran is a good enough player that you want to keep him on there, and he helps this team climb even further. Look, I know they're not going to necessarily contend for a title or even for the Eastern Conference throne, but at the same time, you want to make the playoffs. You have to with a roster as bloated as this one. And trading away arguably your best player in Dragic really hurts those chances. Mm-hmm. Not to mention the fact that when you acquired him, one of the things that you sold on him was the loyalty to the organization to get him to re-sign. And then you trade him 3 years later because of some bad moves from the front office's perspective. Now, it was through no failing of Dragic. He's lived up to his contract. He's done everything we could have expected for him. So to trade him, I think, is not necessarily something Miami would look to do.
Yeah, and look, if there was a trade on the table, you would have to establish two key assumptions. And number one would be, for example, if it were, and I was talking with our Locked On Suns host on Twitter. We were messaging back and forth, and he's actually pitching us deals. And so one of the deals
does he want Dragic from his perspective?
Yeah, he messaged me out of the blue and said, would the Heat be interested in these two packages? And one of the packages was Tyson Chandler, who's on an expiring contract, the rookie guard Eli Okobo, and Milwaukee's 2020 first-round pick, which Phoenix currently owns. The other deal, and then he mentioned TJ Warren also being on the table. The other deal in a Warren trade would be TJ Warren, the expiring contract of Troy Daniels, and then again that Milwaukee pick from 2020. So either way, you know, you get a young player out of it and then an expiring contract. Now, the two assumptions I was talking about would be in regards to TJ Warren. The Heat would have to like TJ Warren's game a lot because this is a guy who recently signed an extension. He's under contract for 4 more years, and he's got an interesting game in that he's a nice post-up scorer, can get to the rim fairly easily, and just has a knack for scoring, especially like in the paint, but isn't a guy who stretches the floor by any means, isn't a great passer or playmaker, is played a lot of the three, but probably is more of a four in today's NBA. And so, you know, he's young. He is, how old is he? He is 24, about to be 25. And so if you want to have him for 4 years, you've got him locked up until his age 29 season. But the Heat, again, would have to be in on TJ Warren. I like TJ Warren's game. I've liked him since college, but when he went to NC State, I don't know if I like him for Miami, only because, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, I think they need more floor spacing, and Warren doesn't necessarily provide that. Now, the other one is Tyson Chandler. Look, if you trade Dragic for Tyson Chandler and a first-round pick, basically, then you're clearing up $18 million next season. And that would be the and that would be the other assumption, is that if the Heat are really serious about trying to clear up some cap room, and they've kicked the tires on Whiteside, and they kicked the tires on Tyler Johnson, and they've concluded that they can't trade those guys, then maybe Dragic is the next best. First of all, Dragic is the third biggest salary on the team, so if you're really trying to clear cap space in one fell swoop, that would be one way to do it. And to trade Dragic for Tyson Chandler and a couple of minor assets and draft picks would be a way to do that.
Look, I get it. I understand. I know a lot of fans are probably listening to that option. You know, anytime you mention a first round pick, even for Milwaukee, where you know they'll probably fall late in the first round. I'm going to go against type here, obviously, and I'm going to be consistent in this. I don't care about that draft pick. I think it's going to be too low, and I like Dragic personally, and I want him on that team. So I know there's a chance to rebuild, to kind of blow up what you've got, and I know that there's a glut, not just of players, but also of salaries, and you want to try and move those as much as possible. I just don't know that you're going to get enough in return. I know
unless D-Wade has some intel that Jimmy Butler wants to come to Miami.
Now if that's a possibility, and I doubt that it is, but if you're saying that you're moving Dragic because you're trying to legitimately clear space, and you can attach that first round pick along with Johnson's contract or Whiteside's contract to create even more cap space, then fine. Then as much as it pains me to give up on Dragic's contract or Dragic's just personality and play, I understand that move. Last year we had this debate when it came to the Kyrie Irving discussion. Obviously, he wound up getting traded to Boston. I was reluctant to move Dragic even for Irving. And, you know, obviously Irving is not a complete or perfect player, but he's an upgrade probably at the point guard position despite his injuries. He's young. He's a superstar. He's a gifted scorer. And so there's some potential there. I just don't know, man. I'm not sure that you're going to acquire any kind of player necessarily, even with that first round pick. I think you're stuck with the contracts you have, and I think you make the most of them. And to me, that means keeping Dragic. But I know I'm in the minority here. So you probably want a chance to blow up and see what you can do with that roster, right?
If the Heat have this domino effect of deals in place to go after and chase Kyrie Irving and Jimmy Butler and Kevin Durant and all these guys, I say go for it. But I'm also a fan of chaos and just in general blowing things up and as far as teams go and just kind of seeing what happens. But then again, I don't know. I go back and forth. I like Dragic a lot and I don't see the value. I think Dragic helps his team more than TJ Warren. I think Dragic helps his team more than even potential cap space. But if there is,
you
again,
trade
that
for
domino
Chandler
effect,
and waive him.
It doesn't even matter, I guess. Yeah, you trade for Chandler and buy him out. I don't know. Yeah. He wouldn't play. Either he's on the end of the bench. Maybe he replaces Udonis Haslem if Haslem decides to hang him up. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get to these mailbag questions. We'll be talking about what players around the league would fit best with Miami's young core when we come back. Now on to our mailbag questions, including one about the Celtics being a bit overrated, possibly. But first, Theodore, or HeatBoy32, asks, it seems if Bam Adebayo, Justice Winslow, and Josh Richardson continue to progress, it is likely they may be all in the starting lineup in the next 2 years, assuming that Bam Adebayo, Justice Winslow, and Josh Richardson are future starters. Who would be the ideal players to fill in the other two spots in the starting lineup? I'm curious what you both think the ideal types of players would be, and also who currently in the league would fit best. So
this is a great question, man. Making up for last week's Guardians question, or at least no, because again, like you said, the Guardians question wasn't bad. It was just a little hard to come up with any kind of real content in this, this sludge of August. But this is a really good question there, because Theodore, or HeatBoy32, is absolutely right. That young core there, I know a lot of Heat fans are looking forward to the opportunity to see them play a bulk of the playing time to potentially continue growing and developing. So this is right up our alley as far as these potential scenarios where this core is the future of the Heat organization.
Let's start then, because we were asked what type of player, and then to get even more specific and maybe name a couple of players in the league that would kind of fill out that lineup well. Let's start with the type of player. And we already know what we've seen this template already. We've seen it in Philadelphia up close and personal. If you kind of put Justice Winslow in that Ben Simmons role. I'm not comparing players. I'm just talking about roles. Justice Winslow to the Ben Simmons role. Josh Richardson in that Robert Covington role. And then Bam Adebayo in the Joel Embiid spot, the versatile five who can sort of stretch the floor, handle the ball out by the perimeter, and do some things. Then we already know what the template is. You need a shooter. You need shooters. You need guys who could space the floor and sort of just you know, a guy like J.J. Redick, and then maybe in the case of a guy like Dario Saric or Irsan Ilyasova from last year, also somebody who can stretch the floor from the corners, and then, you know, do a couple other things, rebound the ball, hit the offensive glass a little bit, set good screens, sort of just be that utility player there. And so that's the template, right?
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think, you know, in the scenario that I was envisioning, Winslow absolutely slides down to the point guard position. Richardson probably plays the two, unlike Rocco, who is more of a small forward type. He's a little bit bigger, a little bit heftier than Richardson, so he plays that forward position, and he can slide up to guard fours if need be, and he's quick enough to guard backcourt players. I know you're a big fan of Covington,
yes.
Unless they're playing the Heat, of course. But, you know, you want somebody, you know, we're looking at basically filling both forward spots, I think, alongside the young core, right?
Right. Yeah. I would agree. I actually think James Johnson fits really well with that group.
I agree, but it's tough, right? I'm glad you brought that up because I felt like I'd be too much of a homer in saying that. But I'm still, even to this day, where I know there's a vocal minority, perhaps, that look at James Johnson and his contract and say he's overrated or he's not living up to that deal, whatever. But, man, the guy is as versatile as you're going to get. He is, and I know we've said this before, LeBron light. I mean, he can create plays. He's a good passer when he's fully engaged. Now, we'd like for him to space the floor a little bit more effectively, but he can guard 1 through 5, and we've seen that. He can be very effective in doing so. So he's the kind of player that you want. I just don't know that he's good enough to fill that role.
And you need guys who can guard 1 through 5, right? Because if we're looking at a core built around those three guys, Miami's defense now has completely changed. It is a switching defense. It's a defense that does just switch everything 1 through 5 and needs guys who are versatile and can defend anybody between a point guard and a power forward. And that's what those three guys potentially can do. That's like the best outlook. So you can maybe have one other guy in that lineup who's, for lack of a better word, a defensive liability or, you know, not a prototypical versatile defender, right? And that person would probably be another ball handler and a shooter, somebody who spaces the floor and does enough on offense that it's okay defensively. But you can really only have one of those guys. And so that other spot would have to be a James Johnson type or something like that. So now if we're talking forwards, I don't even know if we need a forward. I think you can actually slide Justice Winslow into one of those forward positions and have a more traditional point guard who can space the floor. You know, Kyrie Irving would be a great fit.
Okay. I like the fit. I understand why he's obviously going to space the floor. He's going to create plays, not just for himself, but for others. And that's something that's currently missing there. I just think that if you're going to make the most out of what Winslow can do, you want the ball in his hands. He has to be the team's primary ball handler, playmaker, and that's fine. And I think he's capable of filling that role. You know, because we're not quite sure or sold on his shooting. So we need for him to be able to make plays for others and guys that are more of a spot up type skill set.
What about CJ McCollum, who is more of a secondary ball handler, but can handle the ball, do some pick and roll stuff to alleviate Justice Winslow because you need a secondary ball handler.
Yeah.
And can shoot threes really well and might be available.
Yeah, that is an option. That is an option. I mean, I like that fit a little bit better than the Irving one because I think he won't need the ball as much. He's used to playing off of Dame Lillard there, so he knows what it's like to play off ball. He can make space for himself. He knows how to come off screens really well. He creates his own shot pretty easily, so I think that's a good fit there. I guess in that assumption, then, Winslow would be playing the quote-unquote ball handler guard position alongside CJ McCollum, and then Richardson would still be playing the three.
Yeah, and then but defensively it works because Winslow can guard other forwards, right? And
so you could play
McCollum and Richardson guard the backcourt.
That makes sense. I guess McCollum could probably hold his own. He's not a bad defender.
He
might not be a great one.
And depending on who the other forward is, everybody can cover up for McCollum.
Yeah. So I guess I was just moving forward with the assumption, and maybe we should lay out why we think this works best. Like you talked about the comparison to Philadelphia, but I think it makes sense to kind of explain that maybe a little bit further, why you need those. I mean, the shooting, obviously, you explained that. You need that kind of versatile shooting and playmaking ability. Defensively, you want that kind of versatility. I guess that's enough right there. I was just kind of thinking maybe like providing a little more base for our listeners. But from my perspective, I like the idea of Winslow sliding into the backcourt alongside Richardson. So I thought more along the lines of two traditional forwards. And I had Chris Middleton. I think a guy, he plays a lot. He can play the two, but he played mostly at the three last year. I know that was coming back from injury, but he's really good as a shooter, very underrated, multiple, you know, versatile defender that can guard a number of positions, can create his own shot. Now, that's something that he doesn't do often, nor does he do it effectively all the time, but he can do it. And I think, again, as a spot-up shooter, you want somebody like that. You've got Winslow being the primary ball handler, creating space. Middleton on the corners there, to me, that's a really exciting opportunity for him to knock down shots, easy shots at a high rate. So that was what I was thinking. And then from a power forward position or another forward position, I was going with Blake Griffin.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. It's crazy because I'm not a fan of Griffin personally. But from his skill set, he fits. He's also a guy who can handle the ball. He brings it up court. He does space the floor, whether we want to admit it or not. He averaged over 7 assists while he was in Detroit last year.
One of the greatest passing bigs ever.
Yeah, I mean, he is an excellent passer.
So if there is a post big contract Blake Griffin, kind of Amari Stoudemire point of his career.
Okay.
Like when the Heat got him, Blake Griffin.
Yeah.
I like that. You know, ready to just kind of ready to go into the twilight of his career and accept a minor role.
Yeah.
That's actually not bad. But it also doesn't exist yet. What about like Joe Ingles?
No, that's a good one. I mean, he's an upgrade over Middleton? I don't know.
No, I thought we were going to do two forwards, Middleton and
Ingles. Okay, Middleton and Ingles. Ingles kind of playing the four. Yeah, I guess that would work pretty well. Yeah, he's a guy that's, you know, the knock on him is stupid. You know, even in today's day and age, he doesn't look like a basketball player, whatever the hell that might mean, but he's really, really good.
He's only the best three-point shooter in the league last season.
Yeah, if you haven't watched a lot of Jazz games, and I understand why, because stylistically they're not the sexiest team out there. They grind things out. They slow things down with their defense. But he was really, really good. I wouldn't say the best player, knowing that Donovan Mitchell was in that squad, but the most consistent one, that's for sure.
Now, let me throw one other thing at you before we move on. If Miami does indeed, maybe they fast forward to this triumvirate core of starting Justice, Richardson, and Bam. Let's say they pull off that trade that we talked about at the top of the show. They move Dragic to Phoenix, get Tyson Chandler first-round pick, use that first-round pick to unload Hassan Whiteside. All of a sudden now, this team is right into they've gotten into gear for this to build around this young team. And now they have the cap space to go after these free agents in the next couple of years. Could you see Jimmy Butler and Kyrie Irving around this core? I mean, does that work?
I absolutely think it does, you know, and that's another great one too, to be honest with you, because you talked about Irving already as being a great fit, another ball handler. You know, you've got Richardson playing the two, Winslow sliding up and down as a primary or a secondary ball handler, but also a guy who can create offense, guard a number of positions. And then Butler, you know, obviously Winslow would fit pretty well at the four. Yeah. I think defensively he can match up pretty well with a lot of smaller fours. Mm-hmm. And then Butler, versatile defender, great shot creator. He can fill up the rim. I mean, it's a great fit.
It'd be like Kyrie and Josh Richardson in the backcourt, Butler and Winslow as your forwards, and Bam as your center. That would be defensively. On offense, it could even be, you know, Winslow as your point guard, Kyrie off the ball playing more like he did in Cleveland next to LeBron, Richardson, Butler, and Bam.
I think that makes it one of the three best teams in the Eastern Conference right away.
All right. Well, we'll talk about Miami's version of the Monstars, which is not that, surprisingly, when we come back after this break. A Heat version of Space Jam 2? We'll see who makes the team. But first, Mikev writes in, do you think nationally there has been a bit of an overreaction to the Celtics? I know people like Bill Simmons have Jason Tatum as the second coming, but I think the overlapping skill sets of Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward, and Jason Tatum will actually be a detriment at some point, given NBA egos. What do you think? This is what happens when you do the show notes, David. We have typos all over the place.
My God, I'm sorry, Russ. I was in a rush here. We were trying to delay it, but I tried to get it out as quickly as possible. But you know what? Maybe along that same line, you know, getting it too quickly, I think the overreaction to the Celtics, maybe people are rushing to anoint them as the best team in the Eastern Conference. Now, is it overreaction? I don't know. I think you're right as far as Mike Kev writes, the overlapping skill set there. But you kind of want that in a team, I think. If you're looking for a team that's capable of contending in today's day and age, you either have a number of superstars or you have a number of really, really good role players that can play at a high level, higher than the level that Miami's role players can play. And I think that's where Boston kind of sets the bar a little bit higher. And I think there's not much separating the Celtics and the Heat, in my opinion. I think the difference, and it's something that you and I have talked about before, is the center position, specifically a center who's willing to pass the ball and share it with his teammates and also capable of spacing the floor much more consistently than Hassan Whiteside. So that's the difference in having a guy like Al Horford. Do you think it's an overreaction? I don't think the egos is going to be a problem because I think at this point, Brad Stevens has a pretty good handle on those guys and getting them to play. And as long as they've achieved success, which they have, they've made it to the Eastern Conference Finals for the last 2 years.
That's why this is not an overreaction. I mean, this is a team that was within a game of going to the finals last season.
Yeah.
There's no overreaction here. LeBron left. He is now in the Western Conference. So now the conversation naturally is who becomes the team in the East? Who comes out of the East and goes to the NBA Finals to play, presumably, the Warriors? And so it naturally makes sense to say, well, let's look at the team that was in the Conference Finals against LeBron last year. Let's look at the team that, despite not even having Kyrie Irving, having a very young roster, unproven roster, got into it within a game of knocking off LeBron last season. Yeah. What overreaction is there? It's the most logical reaction conclusion that exists. I think there's more of an overreaction with the 76ers because I didn't like their offseason and they don't have a general manager yet. I think there's more. I see no overreaction with this. I think that I've seen people talk about that the Celtics are overrated and everything like that. Jason Tatum might make the All-Star team in his second year.
I don't know about that.
He's really good. He's really good.
I don't know that All-Star is an option, considering you got Gordon Hayward coming back, though. That's the whole thing. I think this is what Mike Kev is talking about is the fact that Tatum got a chance to shine last year because of Hayward's injury. But with Hayward coming back, how do those pieces fit? Is Hayward going to play the four?
I think Jaylen Brown plays the four, Hayward plays the two, and Tatum plays the three. But they're all just wings. We know how Brad Stevens is ball handlers, wings, and big men, and he's got three wings. I don't see that their skill sets are overlapping. I think Jaylen Brown is the best defender out of that group. He can play. He played the four as a rookie. He played the two last season. I see him going back and playing a Shane Battier-type four position. I see Gordon Hayward just being that guy who, you know, the Boston's version of Kevin Durant, where you could just give him the ball and let him go to work. He's not the isolation player that Durant is, but that's what he does.
He handles the ball really well.
He handles the ball really well. He's your shooting guard in a lot of ways because he's the secondary ball handler next to Kyrie. Where Jason Tatum, and in recent interviews with actually Bill Simmons, Tatum said that he was working on playing off the ball and you know, more of the catch and shoot things. Tatum made a really good point in that interview where he said, look, people don't think I'm going to be as productive next year because we have all our guys coming back. But he had to shoot with the ball. He had to create his own shots most of the time last season because Hayward was hurt and because Kyrie Irving eventually got hurt at the end of the year. He was creating all of his own looks. With having Kyrie and Hayward there, his shots are going to be even easier. I mean, they are going to drive and kick to him. He understands that he needs to get better as a catch-and-shoot three-point shooter and doing all those things that he can do. And then when he has to, he can go isolation, which he was very effective at as a rookie. So I love that team. I think the Celtics are really good. I think that the comparisons to the Heat are good because they kind of have the better version of all the Heat players. And so that... I don't think that there's going to be any overlapping skill sets. If there are, it's the skill sets that you want to overlap. It's versatility and 3-point shooting. The more of those guys you have, the better. Look at the Warriors. Nobody talks about how their skills overlap, because they have a bunch of 3-point shooters, but they don't overlap because you want those kind of guys.
Are the Celtics your pick to represent the East?
They are.
You think they're better than even Kawhi Leonard and the Raptors or the Philadelphia 76ers?
Yeah, I don't know. I think Kawhi only has one quadricep muscle at this point, so we'll see what happens with him. But even then, you know, I like that core more than, you know, brand new Kawhi Leonard with a brand new head coach in Toronto next to a declining Kyle Lowry. And then for Philadelphia, I think they're obviously the other team. I really do. Maybe I'm just buying into all the hype here, but logically, Philadelphia looks really good. So does Boston. And I think the Bucks, we have to consider them as well, because Giannis might be the best player in the East at this point. You got to – those three teams I really like, and I like what the Pacers did this offseason too, but I don't know if they're there yet.
Okay, let's move on to our next question.
Okay. Dr. Dres asks – not Dr. Dre, but Dr. Dres or Dress. If Space Jam 2, the Miami Heat edition, was created, who would your five Monstars be and why? They have to be on the current roster plus Wade and Haslam. David, I know Space Jam is one of your favorite movies ever.
No, actually, it's not. It was a fine movie. I remember it coming out, but I think I may have been a little too old for that window when it did to influence me the way it has our younger generation of basket bloggers. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure that it resonates with me so much. I think I was more interested in Bill Murray than anything else at that time. I'm a big Warner Brothers fan, and I love all things basketball related, even Jordan related. So it was fun to watch. I just don't know that I can think about a team of Monstars. I think you might be a little bit better at handling this one, and I can play off that.
Well, the first obvious one is James Johnson has to be one of the Monstars. So basically what the Monstars did was they touched a basketball and their powers went into the basketball, or NBA players touched a basketball, that basketball sucked in their powers and then redistributed those powers to a group of weenie aliens who then became monster aliens, and therefore the clever name of the team was the Monstars. And so
now, correct me if I'm wrong, this was Muggsy Bogues, Ewing,
Muggsy Bogues,
Larry Johnson, Charles Barkley, and Sean Bradley.
Yes, Sean Bradley was the last one, I believe.
Yeah, 7'6", white and goofy. I mean, he was perfect for any kind of animated effort there, so it made a lot of sense.
So Kelly Olynyk takes that space.
Damn, that was rough.
Yeah.
They're coming out full guns a blazing there. Yeah. Just took out Olynyk with one fell swoop.
Kelly Olynyk is the goofy white guy. One of the aliens becomes Kelly Olynyk. James Johnson, obviously Bloodsport. He's just in the spirit of the Monstars, playing absolutely no basketball when he's on the court. He's just drop kicking and just, you know, everybody on the opponent's team. So that's what James Johnson will do. Feels like Bam Adebayo has to be a Monstar. Like, he seems like a baby Monstar in the making.
Well, he's got that kind of physicality, kind of, right. He looks a little maybe even like LJ, like Larry Johnson. Mm. I mean, he's definitely got the bulk, the ball handling skills that Larry Johnson had many years ago. So that kind of fits. I could see that. He's got the skill set where he's like this huge guy, but also really versatile. So it's just the aspect of it, the aesthetic of it, of seeing this big monstrous looking guy being able to move as quickly and as well as he does with the ball in his hands. I think that's perfect for Space Jam 2.
The other one is Dwayne Wade, because you need like the veteran leader, ball handler kind of guy. Like, he would be the leader of the Monstars, right? Even if, yes, he's past his prime, but it just, the storyline makes sense. You need to have that character. Goran Dragic isn't aggressive enough to be a Monstar. No. Maybe you could put Dion Waiters in there, but I don't even think the aliens would want Dion Waiters' powers. So I'm going to go with Dwayne Wade because of his reputation, that Flash reputation. Maybe the alien who takes Dwayne Wade's powers, like, grew up with like a poster of Dwayne Wade on his wall on like Saturn or wherever the alien's from, and just wanted to be the Flash when he grew up. And so the alien comes back down and like gets Dwayne Wade's powers, but is thoroughly disappointed when he realizes it's only 36-year-old Dwayne Wade and not, you know, 25-year-old Flash Dwayne Wade. I'm writing the script for this already. This is great.
Yeah, this is perfect. Hollywood execs, all we want a minor EP credit on that, please.
Doesn't Udonis Haslam have to be another Monstar? Doesn't somebody need to be like the scowling mouthpiece throwing Monstar? Or do we already have that with James Johnson?
If the original calls for like a number of big men on that roster, and we don't have anybody like Muggsy Bogues, right? We don't have any small tiny Monstar that's kind of a badass ball handler. So it makes sense to have a lot of bigs there. I guess Wade's the primary ball handler, and then you have all the other bigs. Would you have Whiteside in there as well for his cartoonish muscles?
Yeah, maybe Whiteside. I was thinking even like a Derrick Jones Jr. because of the dunk contest thing.
Ooh, that's not bad. That's not bad. I like UD, though. Maybe fashioning a mouth guard on like some piece of metal or something like that.
So we can even take Bam Adebayo out and replace him with a Whiteside or like a Derrick Jones Jr.
Springy, very long, springy, kind of skinny looking, but able to like leap into the high area of the arena there. Right. I could see it. I could see it from an aesthetic perspective. It makes a lot of sense. So far we got Wade, Derrick Jones Jr., Udonis Haslam, Kelly Olynyk, and possibly Hassan Whiteside
and James Johnson.
Oh, James Johnson.
So it'd be Wade.
Okay. Whiteside's out.
Yeah, Whiteside's out. So Wade, Derrick Jones Jr., James Johnson, Olynyk, and Bam. Wait, and Haslam.
Yeah.
That's not a bad starting lineup.
It's not
a lot of spacing, but
now the real question, could Michael Jordan at age 51 and some Warner Brothers characters defeat that version of the Heat Monsters?
The second best guard ever versus the best guard ever, Dwayne Wade. I don't know.
Wow.
Maybe because Wade's past his prime a little bit, I'll give Jordan a chance.
I want to see Jordan pull down the number 23 from the American Airlines Arena rafters.
Wow.
At 51, yeah. Remember that jersey's over. You know,
yeah.
It's a good thing they put those oversized jerseys up in the rafters because Jordan's put a little weight on over the last 20 years.
This movie makes a lot of sense. There's a lot that works here. Who's the Bill Murray character?
Jimmy Buffett? I don't know. Who's our one Heat fan that could be
I think we can use any comedian. I think they just made Bill Murray a
let's get Bill Murray back.
From Chicago? I don't think he is.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's huge.
I didn't know that. Okay, so we do
he's
need
a huge
somebody.
Bulls fan.
It would have to be like Daniel Tosh or something, which would suck.
I don't know. We get like Dan Le Batard, Stu Gatz? Is Stu Gatz or Bill Murray?
Yeah, he went to UCF. I think
Wayne
that works.
Knight. He's not Newman.
You can have Stu Gatz as Bill Murray, and then yes. Levitard can be Newman.
Okay, Levitard is Wayne Knight. I love it.
Does that work? Whatever. He's Newman. All right. Well, that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening, and thank you for dealing with these questions. As always, you can reach us by email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter by using the hashtag AskHelloHeat. Support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Thanks for listening. One last thing before you go. If you run a company and you're unhappy with your return from advertising online or in print, try something new and advertise on a podcast here at Locked On Heat. This is a great opportunity for local South Florida businesses to connect with Heat fans. More and more people are listening every day. 50% of U.S. households listen to a podcast, and 1 in 5 Americans between ages 18 and 49 listen to at least one a month. That's according to Nielsen. Thanks to the rise in mobile options from iTunes to Spotify and more, to your smart speaker at home, there's more ways than ever to listen to podcasts. Now is the time to get in. Be ahead of your competition and start advertising on a podcast with us. Our rates are reasonable and based on the number of listens, so you get what you pay for, with numbers to back it up. Whereas print, TV, and radio ads are a shot in the dark. You have no idea who is reading, watching, or listening. That's not the case with podcasts. If you want to reach engaged, passionate, and knowledgeable South Floridians, this is the way to do it. For more information on next steps, email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com, and we could be talking about your company on the next episode.